Good afternoon and welcome to Eagle FM this wonderful afternoon. And just a short reminder, in case you didn't, in case you missed it, there is a reason why I did not throw a home run in there, because we have a new program that is starting today, and it will be running for a while now, and that is Witani Childline program. In collaboration with Lifeline Childline. And joining me this afternoon is Akachana Siseho and Phoenix Faith. And they have something, they have two interesting topics to basically share with you this wonderful afternoon. And the first one is a digital footprint and privacy. And the second is who to talk to when you feel unsafe. But let's start by introducing the two, smart ladies that will be walking you through these two topics that I just pointed out to you. So, Kachana, Faith, welcome to Eagle FM.
Thank you. So happy to be here. I'm Faith.
And I'm Kachana.
Kachana?
Yes.
Please say that again.
And I'm Kachana.
All right. Thank you very much. So, ladies, how is the afternoon?
It's going very calm.
It's going very calm.
That's a lie. None of us are calm. We're all on our nerves, but it's going good.
Yeah, it is actually. Well, it's it happens for the first time. Yeah. Believe me, we well been there, done that. Yeah, you know, just breathe. You'll do just fine. Actually, you're doing just fine by, you know, the tone of voice, the tone of your voice and composure. Now, I'm not going to take much of your time. I'll just shift all the, you know, I'll just give you guys the floor to give us, to share with us the information that you brought to us this wonderful afternoon. That's on the two topics, that's digital footprint and privacy, and who to talk to when you feel unsafe online. And if you just tuned in, this is, you're listening to Witani Childline radio program in collaboration with Lifeline Childline. And the two ladies that will be addressing you on this topic, on these two topics, are Kachana Siseho and Phoenix Faith. Ladies, take it away.
So, what would you do if your old TikToks from 2020 suddenly appeared on everyone's phone after you swore you deleted them? Exactly. You are locked on to Eagle FM in partnership with Witani Childline Radio, where we talk about what y'all are talking about. I'm Faith, and today we are diving into something you've always left behind without even realizing it.
And I'm Kachana. Wait, when you say something we always leave behind without realizing, do you mean the crumbs from the cookies you ate in the studio earlier? Because I definitely noticed that.
No, I am not talking about those crumbs. I'm talking about digital crumbs, your digital footprint. Every time you like a post, search for a pair of sneaks on Google, or even check into your favorite spot in Windhoek, you leave a permanent trail online.
Oh, the digital trail. You know, a lot of people think, I have nothing to hide, so why should I care? But your digital footprint isn't just about secrets. It's about your future.
Exactly. Think about it this way. Companies use your footprint to track your habits and target you with ads, yeah? But even more importantly, employers and universities in Namibia are actively checking social media footprints before they hire or admit anyone. What you post today can affect your paycheck tomorrow.
So true. What is on the internet, it's basically written in stone. Even if you hit delete, someone could have screenshotted it. So, how do we actually manage this footprint? Give us the quick guide.
All right, let's do a quick privacy audit. For everybody listening in their cars right now, or even at home, let me tell you the steps. So step one is Google yourself. Yes, yes, you heard it right. Look yourself up. I know it sounds crazy, but type your name into Google and see what images or links pop up. If you don't like what you see, it's time to clean up.
Step two is a big one for social media. Check your privacy settings. If your Instagram, TikTok, or Facebook accounts are set to public, anyone in the world can see your business. Switch those settings to private or friends only. You don't need random strangers knowing your daily routine.
And step three, watch your location tags. I cannot drag this more. Sharing that you're at a specific place while you are at, while you're still there, you shouldn't let everyone know your exact location. Guys, I told you I lied when I said I was calm. I'm not, so forgive me. But like I was saying, posting your real-time pictures, no, it's a no. Post that selfie after you've left.
That is a solid safety tip. Basically, be mindful of what you share. Your data is valuable. Don't just give it away for free.
For reals. Treat your personal data like your wallet. Keep it secure and don't leave it lying around.
While you let that sink in, let's go for a little ad break.
All right, we are going to go on a break and we'll be back and continue that wonderful conversation about digital privacy in just one or two ad breaks. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoe ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuana. Konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special angetashia kengeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge pata fana na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heavy nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners, wherever you tuned in from. We continue where we left off that discussion, or more like the ladies, the tech experts, safety, online safety experts I have here in the studio with me. The online experts I have in here in the studio with me will continue where they left off, not where I left off. I didn't contribute anything. So, ladies, the floor is yours.
If you're just joining us, you are locked into Eagle FM in partnership with Uitani Childline Radio, where we talk about what you talk about. Let's step back in. In case you missed the first half of the show, I'm Kachana.
And I'm Faith. We're hanging out with you today talking about all things digital safety. In our last session, we broke down why you need to treat your personal data like your actual wallet. Keep it safe, locked up and secure.
Exactly. Your digital footprint is permanent. But now we're stepping into session two and we got to talk about the heavier side of the internet. Because what happens when things actually get sketchy? Who do you even turn to when you start feeling unsafe online?
Right? Because let's be honest, you need real support when the internet gets weird.
For real, like cyberbullying, random creeps in the DMs, or people threatening to post stuff about you. And the worst part is that feeling of being completely alone in it. Like you can't just tell anyone because you're afraid you get your devices confiscated.
Exactly. But we got you. No need to worry. First line of defense, those block and report buttons are your besties. Don't argue. Don't fall for the rage bait. Just block.
And yes, we know the first instinct is always to tell your best friend, which is great, by the way. A true friend would help you report and block the creep.
Okay, let's keep it 100. If someone is actually threatening you or is getting dangerous, let me hold your hands when I say this, Your friends can't always fix it. You need an adult, kids.
Exactly. But what if you're worried about your parents might panic or overreact?
Low-key, the classic African parent reaction.
Right. If that's what's holding you back, start with a cool family member. Think of an older sibling or an older cousin or an aunt.
Telling an older cousin, sibling, or any trusted adult, really, they can help you and clean up the digital mess and figure out the best way to explain it to your parents.
Now, what happens if the situation is way more serious? Like, say you've been talking to someone online who thought was a friend, but then they tricked you into sending a private photo, and now they're threatening to shade if you don't do what they say.
And that is exactly when you call 116 to speak to a professional counselor at Childline.
Exactly. They don't know who you are, they will never judge you, and trust me, you're not alone. They can guide you through the legal steps to protect yourself and get the content taken down.
And finally, don't forget, you can talk to the platforms themselves. If somebody is spamming your comment section with hateful messages, do not engage. Use the built-in report and block tools on TikTok, Instagram, or whatever app you're on, because trust me, all these apps have that function. Let the app safety team do the heavy lifting for you.
And that is a wrap on today's digital safety breakdown. Remember, guys, the internet is a massive sandbox, but you gotta watch out for the quicksand. If anything online ever feels sketchy, malicious, or just makes your stomach drop, speak up.
Exactly. Don't sit in silence. Reach out to a trusted adult, call the experts at Childline Lifeline on 116, or, this is my favorite part, hit the report and block button.
Massive shout out to everyone locking in with us today. We also want to extend a huge thank you to Lifeline, Childline, and all our incredible sponsoring partners for making this program possible. Keep your profile secure and protect your private information. We've been your hosts, Kachana.
And Faith, you are locked into Eagle Radio, Eagle FM, in partnership with Uitani Childline Lifeline Radio, where we talk about what you're talking about. We will catch you right here on the next spin. Bye.
And there you have it, dear listeners. That was very informative. Thank you very much. And if you just tuned in, you may have missed the program. The program is Uitani Childline Radio program in collaboration with Lifeline Childline, which was basically given to us this wonderful afternoon by Kachana Siseho and Phoenix Faith. And the two topics that were discussed were digital footprint and privacy, and who to talk to when you feel unsafe, and the information is provided. And don't worry, if you missed it, you can still find it on the Eagle FM app. And ladies, till next time, keep bringing the topics.
Sure. Bye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora itatu natu bali o itatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima. Small things. Travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamweli nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe ibali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome to Home Run now. We start from here and we basically transition more like a shift from we Tani Childline radio program in collaboration with Lifeline Childline with Eka Chana Seho and Phoenix Faith. With their digital footprint and privacy and who to talk to when you feel unsafe online, and we shift basically from that to Home Run. And we go global, but we're not going global, we're going continental.
I was very fearful you might have said, we're going to get into serious mode right now. And I'm like,
nah.
We've been serious the whole time.
Oh, we've been serious the whole time. Now, so, biodiversity, huh?
Biodiversity.
Yeah. Now, this is biodiversity according to the African Union and the engagement they had on the subject back in February.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the subject of back in February.
Yeah.
It's also primarily that this comes after the second Africa Climate Summit that they held in October last year.
Yeah.
Now, this is basically a declaration. Now, I almost said hyperbole, but then I also have to use other substitute words. Now, in the document of declarations, decisions, and resolutions from February earlier this year, so it's our discussion basically starts on page 147 of that massive document, Helmut. But I actually want to get to the particular scenario of what they recognized. And this is where things...
I'm loving the language these days.
And we keep having the recognition language taking place every time. Now, they recall, recommend, note, but then we get to recognize. They recognize the commitments made in the inaugural African Leaders Nairobi Declaration on Climate Change and Call to Action, which underscored Africa's urgent demand for global climate justice, equitable financing, and accelerated action to reducing emissions. Then it rolls over into the next one. Just not 0.5, Helmut, 0.6, the underscore. Underscoring the importance of... Remember, Helmut, there's a lot of time that happened between October last year and February this year, and then after February, up to now, May... No, where are we? June. Up to now, June 26. 26 June 2026. Where they say, underscoring the importance of finalizing and operationalizing the common African position on climate change, peace, and security. As a decisive step and advocacy tool towards a unified and strategic continental response to these interlinked challenges of climate justice, equitable financing, and accelerated action to reducing emissions. Now, I will just leave that anchor there, because it's the anchor that they also need to carry. It's the anchor that also plays a significant role primarily in trying to understand, are we doing things united as an Africa, or are we doing it divided as 54 different states, individual states? And When you saw it from climate change, peace and security, I mean, the common African position is, it's a difficult one to gauge. We have now realized there's even a difference in terms of opinion, and I literally say opinion or informed opinion between the African Commission that represents the heads of state cluster and even the technical committee. Remember the one where Bekele Thomas was speaking at, the STC, about infrastructure and...
The Africa Continental Free Trade.
And energy, yeah. Infrastructure, transportation, and energy, né?
Yeah.
Which speaks into AFCFTA, which is supposed to be also like a targeted, unified approach.
Yeah.
Now, why can we have a targeted, unified approach on climate? Try to have one on climate change, but we basically don't see the basics in terms of understanding peace and security firstly before even getting to continental commercialization. And this coming Monday, yeah, our colleague Hende, he's standing off screen here, guys. He's our cameraman designate. Just so that you know, Hende, you can say hello in between. So Hende sent Hende sent me and David a webinar poster for Monday.
Yeah.
Where the same AU guys will now look at women and youth primarily in terms of achieving commercial opportunities within a AU scope under the AFCFTA discussion.
Yeah.
Now, remember Helmut, which we every time we talk about climate and every time we talk about AFCFTA, we always remind our listeners that certain things don't happen in isolation.
No.
Everything is interconnected to each other, and there are certain particular requirements Africa First has to achieve, like, firstly, peace and stability on the continent. Doesn't matter which country, peace and stability first. But no matter how, even you and I identifying here to our audience on Eagle FM, peace and stability, which is the fundamental requirement, which comes from the same document, by the way. Remember, we started with it first, the one about the AU army.
Oh, yeah, joined the military. Okay.
Yeah.
I love good one.
When we started with that one, where the AU realized it needed permissions from the regional bodies, from SADC, from the Eastern African one, from ECOWAS,
yeah,
from the North African one, from the Sahel one. And then we realized, okay, so the fragmentation already exists. So from the basis of fragmentation, which is contained in the same document, the basis of fragmentation, that means that's the first order of the day, basically, for the whole continent to firstly achieve. Close the fragmentation before you even get into a unified continental position on climate change. Anyway, we individually as nations are supposed to be submitting nationally determined contributions, NDCs, meaning our commitments to climate change,
yeah,
at the UNFCCC. So we anyway did that as Namibia. We submitted in 2021. We submitted in 2023. Because I tried looking up the updated one, and the updated one is the one from 2023 when Minister Shifeta, Bamba Shifeta, had submitted the updated one already. So we already did our part as Namibia. The question is, has the rest of the continent done their part? Has the rest of the continent? So technically, you can take Namibia out of this conversation,
mm-hmm,
like right now. Just subtract Namibia. Or potentially also SADC. Just subtract some of them. Some of them. Subtract some of them.
Yeah.
Because we now really have to ask the question in terms of, okay, so the African leaders still have to agree upon a common position. I mean, a sentence that says, underscoring the importance of finalizing and operationalizing the common African position on climate change.
Common African position.
That means the consensus has not even been achieved.
Nope.
That means a quorum possibly has not even been reached.
Actually, it gets worse. Forget the whole Africa can as a continent. Let's just come to SADC just for a couple of minutes now, shall we?
Yeah.
in the middle of this whole, Africa versus South Africa thing going on because of the anti-immigration movement going on in South Africa. In the middle of that whole thing, SADC leaders are met for a troika where they talked about one of the things they emphasized was unification and cooperation. I'm like, okay, now this, don't you think this is the worst time to have this discussion? I mean, okay. Okay. Maybe it could be the best time to have this discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, just a few days, I think 2-3 days after that, I go back on the SADC's website and I find that SADC's anti-corruption bodies they met for a discussion where they also talked about things that I found boring because every time that I find an event, I like to go through the documents that that were produced on previous events in the past 2, maybe 3 years. So going back to 2023, one thing that I discovered is that every time SADC anti-corruption representatives SADC member states anti-corruption representatives meet, one thing more often dominates the agenda, and that is transparency in the public procurement sector.
Yeah.
It turns out every time billions of dollars are missing, it's in the, more often corruption is in the public procurement sector, which is not something, which I didn't find shocking because, for one, these anti-corruption bodies are not there to represent the private sector interests.
Mm.
They're there to represent the public sector. So they are talking about corruption for the most part from their public sector standpoint.
Yeah.
Until, that discussion then shifts to the second part of the agenda that has always also been dominating much of their discussions going back to 2023. One thing that you see is that you have corruption in the public sector. That's problem number one. Problem number two is illegal money transfer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
who's central to that, even
are connected.
Definitely.
Yeah. Because no one steals money and then go to the bank and stand in a queue. If you have to steal money from the public sector, you have to, figure out ways to channel that money out of the country in your, at least by your definition, into secure places. So.
And Namibia recently worked towards closing loopholes and gaps.
Uh-huh.
In its financial legislation so as to avoid grey listing?
Now, you see, Now, guess what is the solution that was proposed to one of the reasons to help these anti-corruption bodies in SADC fight corruption?
What?
First of all, working together and exchanging information.
Definitely, yes.
Which
is always the first.
It's
the first goal.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Now that's the first. The second one is the use of AI in. The use of AI.
I don't know what AI must do.
Because, I have not.
Because if AI is used literally to perpetrate a crime, what are you gonna do to use AI to stop the crime?
Look, I found that document and I was just going through and I looked at, some of the discussions being had and the use of AI.
And then they don't expand, ne? They don't expand why
that's
they say
not just
what they
the
say.
Problem. That's not just the problem. We don't have the legislations. And last time we were asked to, actually South Africa asked to come up with a legislation, they asked AI to come up with its own legislation.
And just for the thing to be sent back and said, you use AI.
Now, so coming together, it's from the look of things, is going to be one of the most difficult things because, like I pointed out, SADC was here. SADC member state representatives gathered to talk about cooperation on a SADC level, and at the very in the very same week, a Malawian was murdered in the anti-immigration movement going on in South Africa.
Mm.
So again, it's either the worst time to have that discussion or the worst time to have that discussion because of the current political atmosphere within SADC and Africa at large, or it's the best time to have that discussion because of the exact same reason. So when you look at this on a when you look at this on the on a continental level, when you talk about cooperation on a continental level,
yeah,
let's start from the security component. Well, now the International Security Study. What's one of the things that they noticed when they asked the question of why does Africa has a lot of a foreign military presence? It's because this military presence are paying for the lands they occupy. Mm. And countries like Djibouti, they are making millions in US dollars a year. So it's a very lucrative, well, business at this point.
It's rent, Helmut.
Uh-huh.
They're paying rent. Someone is extracting rent. It's a rental economy.
It's a rental economy. There you go. So they are making a lot of that money. This is now. These are African member states that are making a lot of money from the foreign military installations they have on their land, which they have every right to do.
Yeah.
So can you imagine now how difficult this conversation would be about foreign military presence? Now the Institute of Security Studies, one thing they pointed out is, as long as you have a lot of foreign military presence on your soil, your security becomes a very questionable one.
Mm.
So you have the cons here. The pro is countries that have foreign military installations are making a lot of money from those installations. And the con here is the whole continent is now worried about the continent's security because of foreign military presence. Now, how does the African Union now I don't use convince because these are not kids, sort of like incentivize African countries that have foreign military installations. How are they going to incentivize them in order for them to just look at the foreign military installation beyond the money that they're making out of it? That's not going to be easy, considering the African Union itself's biggest problem is financing its own activities. Means the AU as a whole has financial issues.
Definitely.
And the countries that are making a lot of money from all these foreign military installations, they will tell you, I need that money. It's part of my budget at this point. And when you are renting land, for the most part, you are looking at 99 years. So you are looking at a long-term agreement.
Yeah. Generational wealth, Ahmed.
Yeah.
Generational wealth. I don't know for who in Djibouti, but someone is minting it.
Don't mention any names.
They're basically living it up in Paris.
Yeah, and
they've got a bunch of accountants on the ground. Don't worry.
The guy chairing the African Union right now is from Djibouti. Interesting.
The commissioner?
Yeah, I believe he's from Djibouti.
Is he not from Somalia?
No.
Really? 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 I'm surprised. Okay, now here's another shocking thing.
So, the point I was driving to is cooperation on the African Union. Now, we cannot cooperate on security. We cannot cooperate to finance the African Union. I hardly think we are going to start all of a sudden cooperating on the preservation of the continent's biodiversity.
Well, that's where things get interesting.
Oh, boy.
So, literally this, the declaration part itself, on 47 is almost 20 pages long. Yeah, it's 19 pages long. So it's 19 pages long, specifically talking about identifying some realities, highlighting who said what when and who agreed upon what when and identifying what is outstanding and so on.
Yeah.
There is a resolution part, Helmut, which is last. Then there is a call to action part. Let me just find the call to action part. And then there's an aspirations and commitments part. Now, the call to action basically just goes and says, I know I'm broke. I identify I'm broke. I realize that cash flow is a major problem in enabling me to achieve the goals and aspirations I've got in my head to achieve a better life for myself over there. That's literally what we sound like. Okay, I should actually read the sentence before mocking the AU.
by saying, to advance call to action. We call to action the following. To advance transition towards green and resilient development by investing in renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, urban resilience, land restoration, disaster risk reduction, disaster management, and technology and nature-based solutions. To support the accelerated implementation of relevant AU frameworks, including the Climate Change and Resilient Development Strategy and Action Plan, an Africa Regional Strategy for Disaster and Integrated African Strategy on Meteorology, Weather, Water and Climate, and the African Ocean Governance Strategy. But it says we need work to do. Yet at the start, remember what I highlighted at the start? That the heads of state need to reach consensus on a common position on peace, climate change and security. So I scrolled down to, I was now at what? Call to action. Yeah. I was now at call to action. I scrolled down. Okay. Let me skip to aspirations and commitments. Support the creation of an African-led financial instruments such as the AFDB, green bonds and regional climate resilient innovation hubs that will support the Africa Climate Change Fund. With whose money?
Good question.
With whose money?
With the Italians and the European Union and the Americans and by
Chinese.
The way, and the Chinese. You know what's my favorite part about Africa? We make these plans, excellent plans. The English, by the way, is perfecto.
Yeah, it's pretty clear, very crystal.
Yeah, our English is better
it's
than
better, the It's better than 5G even.
Yeah, now, what's going to happen is after we make all these plans, we will just run around the world and play basically an international fancier version of Hear Me, as a belief.
No, all and, of a twist, not Hear Me. Oliver Twist. Everybody knows Charles Dickens, not Hear Me. Hear Me is just, you could even tell your child, Hear Me, and then the kid goes like,
Look, that's basically what we're doing. But the thing is, now my point is, you asked a good question.
Mm.
These are all excellent declarations, resolutions, whatever you would, the commitments, whatever, you know, I call it more like future plans on how we plan. We have this excellent blueprint of how we are going to implement or basically operate, you know, march our way into this global movement of climate change, you know, not just the climate change, you know, energy transition.
Yeah.
The question is, whose money?
Yeah, whose money? Another thing is also, when you go to the that thing, the common position. The common position, if you go look up under towards a common understanding, literally, Helmut, this is what it looks like. Sorry for the audience. This is what the common position looks like. It's a screenshot of something.
Well, our continental common position is a screenshot.
It's literally a screenshot. I can't even interact with this little thing. It's literally a screenshot. Now, here's the position. If we have to ask the question in terms of, okay, we know that Africa has a lot of biodiversity. Okay, has a huge biodiverse platform that it's got to manage. So I'm talking antelopes, insect species, water-based species, which are both fish and other microorganisms, plant species, bird species, reptilian species, amphibious species. So Africa has it. But one of the biggest concerns, which you can even see playing out, is, for example, the occurrence of disease outbreaks like Ebola happening now in DRC.
Mm-hmm.
With the French public now having, okay, not the French public basically, but the European public now being concerned because a French doctor who came to DRC to help with the Ebola response contracted Ebola, this new strain that is currently there running wild.
Yeah.
And if anyone has seen the same report that I saw specifically that was also done specifically when the One News crew followed the health outreach officials of the DRC, who went out into that city of Goma, the same city that literally always gets attacked. But before
city
that,
of Goma on the other side of the break.
It
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with a full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Buti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for 450 Namibian dollars. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ehangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
And welcome back to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, your drive time show here to keep you company as usual from 4 to 6, Monday to Friday, minus a few, just interruptions. I don't use the word interruption, just a few, call it a time collabos before Monday and Friday. But we continue with African Union's discussion around Africa's diversity. And it's how it can, if harnessed or more like if employed properly to the country's economic advantages, it could really help. But we need a unanimous consensus on how to do that. So, Goma.
Yeah. So, that news crew back in last month from France 24 or from DW that went to literally Goma East, DRC. Remember this now, in between the M23 guys going for walkabouts, ne? Just so that you understand, the M23 guys going for walkabouts. Now, what emanated from the report that I watched was the medical response teams in East DRC literally go around telling everyday people, please wash your hands. Doesn't matter what you do, wash it often. Be hygienic specifically. In terms of the activities that you do, so that if you have to work with your food, you know that you technically washed your hands. Yeah. Basic things, Helmut. Basic things that these guys basically do there in DRC every time when Ebola breaks out, because Ebola breaks out very often in DRC, is primarily that the health response or the health outreach teams in DRC literally go on this education campaign for ordinary citizens. Now, I'm not going to, be bashing the ordinary citizen in DRC with regards to their own personal hygiene factors, but if you see such outreach programs specifically being conducted by the health authorities of an African country, then you know there's also certain particular sort of like fundamental issues happening there. For example, this means that sanitation is also a problem, primarily. This also potentially means that there's potentially not enough investment in local water and sanitation infrastructure, for example, in DRC. Because these are assumptions you can basically work with. Yeah. If you see health outreach personnel, let's say from the Ministry of Health of DRC, having to inform the everyday man and woman on the street, on the pavement, literally, to say, please, did you wash your hands today? How many times did you go to the toilet? Did you wash your hands after the toilet? If no, please wash them from now on every time. Because you could potentially contract very strong and very not so good diseases. Now, if you see communication activities like that taking place on a fundamental level, then you realize there's fundamental issues. Now, let's step back a little bit in terms of identifying climate change. Climate change is not just about
hot weather, species dying out, and stuff like that. It's also the occurrence of certain particular diseases coming about more often than necessary during these climatic changes. You see, the communication, Helmut, that, and this is one of the things that I find at fault of the UN. The UN guys would communicate one thing here, rising temperatures. Then the World Health guys would come and talk to you here about increases in diseases. And when you ask, why are there increases in diseases? And then they say, oh no, it's overpopulation. And overpopulation speaks to UN Habitat. And then UN Habitat will say, but there's underfinancing, which forms part of UNDP. And then you find there's lack of education, which forms part of UNESCO. And then they realize in lack of education, there's also lack of scientific development, which is also part of UNESCO. And so on. You continuously see the tentacles just spreading and spreading. When you bring that to a micro level of a country, or let's say on a AU level, on an AU level, we also realize, or what you and I have also achieved basically in identifying the fragmentation scenario, was literally based upon that there are certain foundational positions that we still have not moved past. And every time when we look towards the best template that exists in terms of a continental approach and continental well-being, the EU just seems to be moving quicker and faster than anything anyone has ever seen in any point in human history in terms of a unified, integrated economic zone, but that has different national identities. No one can find a better template than this. But yet, it is there.
Okay, just so, you know, we'll just be revolving on the same topic here. And that is, why do plans made by other countries or regions or economic blocks move faster than more often the plans that we make as a continent? It's because they first figure out the money part, and then they make the plans. We do it the other way around.
Yes, that's what we also identified 2 years ago, remember? The backwards to front operations of AU. Why I say the backwards to front identification is we know we are in a tough position as Africa, specifically with climate change. We know it. We know that we don't have the money to deal with climate change.
Yeah.
We know it. Yet, we can't agree on a common position. Or we potentially have not reached consensus or enough quorum to be present, even at the meeting, for the consensus to be reached.
Yeah, there's that.
So it speaks to that as well. But first, before you can reach consensus, you need peace on the continent. So it doesn't mean I just go and say yes to just start the process. But Sudan is still shooting itself to bits. South Sudan still is every day, how much do you know how many times the UN guys, the UN Security Council guys, yeah, go and report about South Sudan at the UN Security Council level? Do you know how much? It almost happens every week. There's threat of, once again, violence. Threat, once again, of violence. And this is a special commissioner of the UN,
yeah,
that reports directly to the Security Council. This person has to go and lay down a report, give feedback, because his or her team is literally on the field in South Sudan. And the South Sudanese guys, they don't care because president is a former warlord, vice president is the opposing warlord of the president who is also a warlord, the prime minister is another third warlord. So now you've got three enemies together in government, literally enemies, because they carry guns. These are not Namibia's politics where we are just using microphones and the media. These are literally guys that know where each other
live. That's one thing I like about us, though.
What? All
we want is just an iPhone with two SIMs. Is that too much to ask?
Why did you have to?
We are not asking for an AK-47, which is shout out to us.
Look, it shows how peaceful we are.
Yeah.
But it also shows, Hamoud, that we can literally make a mockery of a political situation.
Ours or Africa's?
Ours and Africa's. Because
Elijah,
it shows we don't have to be violent, but we act the violent. Meaning we use rhetoric and language, and we throw in emotions, and then the media is there to go like snap, 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 snap.
and then it's blurted all over media in Namibia, and now there's like discourse and narrative happening. Do you know what's one of the best things that I've learned from my family member who is a political scientist? When politicians attack other politicians and it gets recorded by the media, they are doing it on purpose. Basically, to show their electorate, their voter base, hey, we are still here. Hey,
so it's,
we are sensitizing.
PR.
It's PR. But in advertising, it was known as awareness creation, reinforcing the message, just basically telling the base, hey, listen, we are here. We didn't go anywhere else. We didn't move out. We didn't do anything. We're still here. We're still relevant. Peace out. Now, anyone can then ask the question primarily of, in recent weeks, for example, what has happened in the Namibian local political spaces regarding, you know, certain particular supposed violent events in at certain scenarios. I won't mention names of which political parties, please, guys. I don't want to be beaten up.
You know
where our offices are. I literally don't want to be beaten up.
No, we're not going to mention some of the locations.
As well.
Even though, you know, may or may not be closer to the sea, but go on.
As well. So, dear listeners, when you see violence against a political party or political party situation happening, yes, I'm sort of like giving you a slight crash course right now here on 26 June 2026, Home Run, Eagle FM. It is a manner in which sometimes the political party who supposedly suffers the supposed embarrassment is actually gaining more
popularity.
So, yes, me and my trained eye in advertising, you sometimes see things that happens in the political sphere, then you go like, huh, whether it's positive or negative, Helmut, the amount of narration or traction or presence in narration or even in public discourse that occurs literally works to the benefit of a political party. So now, ask yourself this particular question, Helmut. And I'm going to ask you to basically play a weatherman, because I have my theory already.
Yeah.
Why do you think we have not finalized a common position on the African continent between the heads of state on climate change, peace, and security?
We are being too formal. We are too, the language, it's just, it's the same reason why, I believe it's the same reason the UN has trouble, has had trouble solving armed conflicts.
Yeah.
Because more often we talk more and try to act more on symptoms instead of addressing the main elephant in the room. Take, for example, what's going on in Sudan right now?
Mm.
What's going on in Sudan right now? If you got, takes us back to the ICJ case. Was that last year or the year before last when it was dismissed at ICJ? Not because of lack of evidence. When I tell you, Sudan went there with all the receipts, only to be told we don't have jurisdiction. Now, you know what happens?
Oh, it means that Sudan isn't part of the ICJ?
No, they are. They don't have jurisdiction because when the UAE signed up for the, signed up for the Genocide Convention, they did something called, something called sort of like a reservation to a statute. Take for example,
which basically exempts them from
certain sections of that agreement
of the international.
Yeah. Now, so the UAE in the 1970s or 80s, signs up for a Genocide Convention, and then they, they include in a reservation, about there's one section of that agreement that talks about that says that they cannot be, okay, yes, we agree with all this except the part that says if we commit war crimes or if we're accused of war crimes, this court will not have the power to investigate or prosecute us.
Mm.
What is the point? Just throw the whole thing away.
So why did they sign on?
Okay, my turn.
Hold on.
on, just let me finish my story. As I was saying, oh,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm.
Just give it more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, aye. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengelo wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoewe ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili unehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuwana onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa mune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa ninge kwa Tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatuimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ileko mderewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu batatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and we continue just a minute past the hour of five. You're still listening to Home Run with Hemd and Dwight, your favorite duo here on your number one talk radio station. So, the big problem here, the issue is, I don't know why they, why they decided to come up with the whole thing of, the whole thing of reservation, because, it negates the whole thing, because the reason behind the whole genocide convention is that when someone is accused of a genocide, then both the accuser and the person being accused or the country being accused, they have a fair chance to present their sides of the story. That's to the international bodies that in this case now is the International Court of Justice. Now, that reservation, that basically exempts one from being investigated and prosecuted, means anyone that signs up for the Genocide Convention with that reservation, what happens is the court that put up the convention cannot investigate or hold them accountable, which makes the entire document useless. And I thought that National Arts Fund, National Arts Fund, Section 19.
Yeah.
I thought that was the most useless. It turns out, we are not the worst at drafting legislations. Turns out that runs in political, hierarchy.
And probably at global, national, what do you call it, at multilateral levels.
Yeah. So the thing is, the biggest problem here is one of the reasons why I believe we as a continent have trouble having unanimous consensus is you have to understand, all countries and all blocs basically have disagreements. But the thing is, like I pointed out earlier, the EU may disagree on a lot of things, but you know what? The things that they agree on, they have money to fund it.
And it's a nice part.
And then there's us that makes a plan just, based on someone else's budget.
True. Here's what also basically works against Africa.
Yeah.
Now, remember I mentioned with the aspirations and commitments statement that support the creation of African-led financial instruments, to fund or basically such as the AFDB green bonds that generate this money. So we asked the question, we want to do this with whose money in order to create these instruments? And then we obviously came to the consensus we have, because there's literally still visible fragmentation present. But just two lines down, Helmut.
Yeah.
Here's literally the humdinger of the statement. The next line after the support of the creation of the African-led financial instruments, after that it gets to prioritizing adaptation. And then they get to line 140, or statement line 140. Advocate for reforms in the global financial architecture that makes climate financing more accessible and equitable, and to support innovative financial instruments tailored to Africa's needs. So we want reforms on other people's money.
Yes, we've always done that. And you know what's going to happen when that money comes here? We're going to steal it and then go buy iPhones with two SIM cards. You see, the thing is, and we saw this happen in Mozambique, and recently we have seen the exact same thing unfolding unfolding in Senegal. Now,
what was the Senegal thing?
Yeah, now, you see, when Faye took office, he realized that the previous administration had been inflating their, call it, the numbers, which leads to them having, like, a good financial standing for them to have to be able to borrow money.
Oh.
So the IMF even scheduled, I think, $1.something billion, to borrow them. But when the Faye administration took over, they decided to do a deep audit on the whole thing. Then they found out that the previous administration had been giving these financial institutions like the IMF false information about how good the African, the country's finances are. They actually were not supposed to qualify for the money that the IMF was already putting together to borrow them.
Yeah.
So the IMF, first of all, they were understandably pissed. And now they were trying to take it out on Faye. And Faye told them, look, man, I helped you uncover this whole crap. I'm not, you don't have to yell at me.
Yeah. And it basically sounds like Mozambique, because Mozambique was, they tried to hide the $2 billion loan.
Yeah.
Because everybody wanted to drive Verpas and not do the work.
When John Mahama took office in Ghana recently, again, what did he find about the previous administration? They borrowed a lot of money, and I don't think those guys borrowed. Those guys decided to put together a lot of money to build a national cathedral, to serve the good Lord. Then they found that all throughout the
period, a religion which is not even indigenous to this continent.
The construction didn't take off the ground, but the money disappeared.
What? The money is gone.
Yeah, the money is gone. The construction was nowhere to be seen. As soon as there was a change in administration, they started again investigating. Minister of Finance decided to go put on his all-stars and run faster than Tura Boys.
Mm.
And so you see that
the former finance minister. Not the current one, of course.
Not the current one, yeah. So when you look at it like this, when you look at it from, especially Ghana and Senegal's template, you have an administration that's just running, and as soon as there's a change in administration, there's an investigation, there's a deep investigation, especially into the country's finances, and you have a lot of money that is unaccounted for, and someone almost always runs out of the country.
Usually the finance minister.
Yeah, well, Mozambique. And brought into South Africa. Seriously?
Worst part is even and he ran even just to Johannesburg.
Look,
he didn't even say, let me run to Cape Town, the furthest city.
No, he should have run to China, because homeboy has a Chinese name.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's
but true. He's black. But look. Look, Africa is a long way.
Starting obviously from the anti-corruption perspective you highlighted.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, the anti-corruption people think that AI is there to be like the holy grail of things. I don't know if they want minority report kind of surveillance mechanisms.
Yeah.
Né? But when you get to the discussion where literally the bosses of those anti-corruption people in SADC,
yeah,
for example, the bosses of them, which are ministers and presidents, can literally circumvent, subvert, undermine, literally compromise a system which looks wonderful on paper. And then all they've got to do is just make sure, okay, don't appoint a head, don't appoint a board, for example, with like the Fisheries Observer Fund.
Yeah.
Don't appoint a board so that you don't have to issue, what's the thing's name?
Annual reports.
Annual reports, so that we don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Don't appoint a CEO, don't do this, don't do that. Literally.
Translation, just don't do your job.
Yeah, don't do anything. Don't do anything. Now, in a Namibian context, Hamoud, how is it that you can count the trust me bro scenario from the mining directorate in Ministry of Mines? How can you can still generate reports, even if it's just from a phone call with a trust me, bro, and a scenario template. Mm-hmm. But you can't generate data from the fishing sector even just to meet the bare minimum reporting standard. Yeah. Now, when you look at a scenario like this, obviously, we have to ask literally a question in terms of, you know, there are people earning salaries that are employed in roles that are basically in these positions, which are government positions.
Yeah.
Yet, we somehow don't realize that when we talk about sustainable development, don't ignore the sustainable word. Don't ignore that word. Sustainable means, okay, today I bought a liter of milk. Today it costs $20. Today I drank that liter of milk half. How much liters is still left? 500 ml, which is half a liter.
Yeah.
Okay, do I have $20 tomorrow to replace the full liter if I finish the 500 ml between tonight and tomorrow morning? A yes and no question. Now, at every point, Hamid, I'm giving you a data point to measure. Ne? Now, why I emphasize on the sustainable part of life for us Africans and Namibians in a micro scenario is that it seems like we don't understand the word sustainable.
Nope.
It seems like we don't understand that we signed up to the SDGs to play our part out of 200 plus countries in the world. We have to play our part in contributing to a holistic, sustainable picture of the global environment and the global ecosystem and the global oceans and the global fresh water supplies. But then I ask you, Helmut, so then we don't correct things after we realize that there's a gap of 10 years of reporting on maritime resources, or the Mozambican previous government tries to hide $2 billion of an IMF loan, or it's the former Senegalese administration who basically was cooking numbers.
Yeah, to sell to the IMF so they can borrow them billions of dollars.
Or it was literally the Kenyan authorities who tried to justify past increasing taxes on the everyday people where they know that Kenya is not far off in terms of inequality.
Yeah, and the question a lot of citizens were asking was, the money that you borrowed that you want to tax us into paying back, what do you use it for? Just show us.
And they couldn't even answer it. Do you realize, Hamut, they never answered that question?
Yeah.
The money, the motivation was most because the IMF told them you needed certain, what structural reforms?
Structural adjustment policies, yeah.
You needed to implement structural adjustment policies. Basically, they needed to prove to the IMF how they're going to pay it back as a country. And then these same legislators of Kenya decided, okay, let's increase taxes on the everyday person. Now, which person will say yes, Hamut, after you voted for them into office and you thought you were going to get a job, as an electorate, now you have to hear you have to pay more tax?
Oh, boy. Look.
So we really, on Africa.
On unanimous consensus?
On sustainability?
Yeah.
I don't think we understand as Africans, or let me rather say our national leaders don't understand the word sustainable.
Which I find very ironic because, there was a time I believed politicians are dumb, but I don't believe that now. You know why?
Why?
Because...
Okay, what do you believe now?
I believe they are smart. Politicians are freakishly smart.
Yeah,
that's how they are able to basically, I think if there's one thing that a lot of politicians are good at is pretending to be dumb.
Or pretending to basically play a role that firstly gets the electorate to buy into their particular message. And then the moment they get into power, then it's like, guys, hands off, everything. you know, gloves off, you know, let's just, let's do it,
Psych! Goodbye. Now,
let's do it. I don't need your votes anymore. Thank you, but no thank you anymore.
Yeah, so when it comes to unanimous consensus, especially on everything financing, we have a long way to go because, for one, if, you know, consider our source of finance as a continent, extractive industry, which we hardly control in mining and processing.
And it doesn't, seem like we're even enhancing processing and refinement.
So we're talking about Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Look, when it came out earlier this year, I think it was about a month or two ago, that Zimbabwe refined its first lithium. The first question I asked myself is, I started looking at it from an Africa Continental Free Trade Area standpoint. Like, okay, now Zimbabwe has refined this lithium. Who is going to buy it from them to build it into a finished product?
On Africa?
Yeah, on the African continent.
I will guess. Can I guess?
Mm-hmm.
China? I went there, Hamut, because do you know why? They are leading they are leading the research and development in battery and in storage technology.
They actually helped them to refine the lithium.
Well, you know, classic. You know, there's no argument.
Look, man, local government policy.
There's no argument there. There's no argument. I can't even defend Zimbabwe. I can't.
Are you kidding me? I tried defending Zimbabwe and the whole of Africa. I didn't find any point to stand on.
And I mean, do you know what's the worst part about being woke? When you realize both arguments exist, then you go like, but this one sounds more compelling than the promise of the other one. For example, like this discussion from this document, this declarations, resolutions, and decisions document. So they tell you a story. They tell you a position of where these African leaders want Africa to be. But then you and I recognize, and they even give the reasons of the current situation on the ground. And then you sit with a picture of, so you know we are here.
That's why I'm telling you politicians are smart.
So you know we are here.
Yeah.
And what are you doing to change this? And then they go say, oh, we must champion reform about other people's money. Not even your own money. You're not championing reform about your money.
You know, the most ironic part of that, if you just look at how, you know, of the basics of how money works, no one likes to keep cash lying around, especially in large numbers. They always invest in different investment ventures.
Well, now, if you were Pablo Escobar,
Pablo Escobar was just using it as firewood to keep his daughter warm. But,
he was even allowing the rats to eat on the stuff.
Rats were richer than the ordinary Colombian. But look, the thing is, every time, if you just look at the scenarios that we just explained, you know, you can look at Fish Rot here in Namibia, or, you know, the Senegal, you know, fiasco in Angola, or the tuna bond scandal in Mozambique, the National Cathedral in Ghana, and the whole IMF, you know, scandal unfolding in Senegal. The thing is, every time, just bring that whole thing to the SADC discussion that they recently had, where I just couldn't help but think that there is a serious, I mean, there is a direct correlation between corruption in public procurement space and illicit finances leaving the African continent. Because this money that is, that is siphoned out of the public procurement space
on a daily basis.
On a daily basis. It's I don't think it's leaving any of these African countries or just or even the whole continent legally. Most of it is mostly leaving the continent, via illicit financial, financial movement. Now, where is most of it going? Global North. These are the people that borrowed you the money. And you know what?
Not just that.
Now, what are they going to do with that money?
Remember yesterday's scenario that you explained about Fonseca?
Yeah.
What's the law firm's name, Tochman? Fonseca something. I almost said Fonseca, but that would have been someone's name here.
That's the Panama, Panama Papers.
Yeah.
What's the name of that law firm?
In Panama.
Just don't.
And now I can't spell Panama. In
really?
Panama Papers. Something Fonseca.
Mossack.
Mossack Fonseca, yeah. So, that law firm, Helmut, that law firm technically knew what it was doing.
Definitely.
Now, to imagine it's the only law firm that existed in the point of history is one of the greatest misrepresentations you can possibly think of. The reason being is that the first thing any like critical thinker has to do is, if this is one law firm, how many law firms of this same caliber
service provider
provides the same service? Because remember, how does the money get out? How does the illicit money financial flows get out of the country? Because how does
you need someone that understands banking and financial movements and, you know, moving money in ways that is untraceable.
Basically. And what was one of the discussions, obviously, that recently, for example, that the IPPR guys tried to sort of like expand on? Beneficial ownership. Who benefits from the public procurement contracts? Who are these companies, for example? Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, you know, that brings to mind, what's this, you know, the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich, you know, a money moving, you know, a money moving mechanism that was designed for a lot of, basically, multinational corporations for them to, you know, for them to, to evade paying taxes.
Mm.
One thing that they pointed out was that, this, a double Irish with a Dutch sandwich is just one method that was designed to help multinationals, you know, avoid paying taxes by using, by using holding companies scattered all, all around the world. Now, the double Irish and the Dutch sandwich, Apple came up on top on that one because they had a holding company, I think, in the Netherlands, and one in Ireland and one in one of the, not sure if the Cayman Islands, one of the tax havens.
Mm.
And then they used a lot of financial loopholes to basically channel that money without, to avoid paying taxes. So, when that thing went bust, one of the documentaries I watched pointed out one thing that, believe me when I tell you, there are a lot of methods like this that are out there that we don't know about.
Mm.
The same can be said about this Mossack, Fonseca law firm. The question you can't help but ask yourself is, how many of those law firms are out there that are doing the exact same thing? Their sole job is not to stand in court and defend clients. There's no money being made there. Channel money in untraceable routes to untraceable locations for people that are stealing it, especially nations leaders and multinational corporations who don't want to pay their taxes. That's how you make your money. And that, unfortunately, is called corporate law.
That's good, Ahmed.
Actually, you see, that's why I, that's why I equated it to, whether it's a corporate, commercial, or company law. You can equate it to hacking. Because all they do is they just look at legislations in any type of country and they will advise you accordingly into which place will be best to hide your money.
Mm. Oh, yeah, after the Panama Papers, it was Paradise Papers.
Now, of course, when you look at the African continent, I believe there's a direct correlation, and thanks, a shout out to the SADC guys, to the SADC anti-corruption bodies on this one. There's a direct correlation between money missing out of the public procurement space and the ever-increasing size in illicit money, financial movement out of the continent.
Mm.
There's a direct correlation between that. So, you see, the irony is we go to the global north, borrow money, and they give us that money. We come here and then steal that money and then send it back to the global north. What do you think the global north is doing with that money?
Mm.
They are investing it in a lot of investment majors. And some of this investment, or maybe we're even going back to borrow the exact same money we stole and then stashed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think stupid is an understatement. A very big understatement. Now, we have a continent that is very diverse in genetics and natural resources and rare earth metals and you name it.
Mm.
But we are still lagging behind in terms of figuring out how can we finance our initiatives. So let's go and borrow. We go and borrow and then steal the money. Wasn't Hitachi Energy, Hitachi Energy Africa implicated into into a scandal in South Africa that, with the billions of dollars missing in their energy sector? Now, And Hitachi Energy, Hitachi is a Japanese multinational conglomerate, and they make a lot of it. We're talking electronics, robotics. Turns out they also make adult toys. I did not know that. One guy was making fun of it on on TikTok. That how does
Hitachi
one
Energy.
Hitachi Energy? Hitachi Energy is the subsidiary. Hitachi Limited. That's the company that
the holding company.
That makes a lot of things, including one guy was like, I don't understand. Because what the guy does is he talks a lot about multinational corporations and what they make and all different things they make and how they just don't match. There was a point where he was talking about Samsung Incorporated and how they make electronics on all these smart TVs and they also make tanks. Then it was like, how does one even, conceive this?
Well, you just register a whole bunch of business units. That means it's in your company registration. Do you know who taught me that?
It's your subject.
Do you know who taught me that?
Yeah.
Elizabeth.
It's not subject. It's your, company object.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elizabeth taught me that. The moment you register your enterprise, we're now talking about for you guys that want to be business owners, you have to think about the scope that you want to operate in.
Yeah.
Or every time when you add a new scope that you want to participate in, you've got to go and update your registration, basically. Instead of just walking in there and then people find out you're not even registered for that scope that you wish to participate in. So, yeah. It's a very easy thing to think about, but it's very easy to forget as well.
You know what? That makes sense because there was a time when I was having a headache trying to understand because I was reading commercial law there was a part where they talk about directors and it basically says that it's very difficult to have a one size fits all type of admission requirement for a director in a particular position because their activities their job description is heavily based on the company's articles of association.
Yeah.
So, and different companies have different, roles, and they also therefore have different articles of association. So, it would be very difficult to come up with one requirement that you will require for one to meet before they start working as a director. Now, it makes a lot of sense because you can update your, you can update your articles of association and your registration documents to add on new things that you'd want your company to be engaged in.
Yeah.
And I can have mine unupdated for 5 years, so it will be very difficult for us to have one, one requirement for, for someone to serve as a director. Oh. Thanks, man.
You should basically thank Elizabeth, the matriarch.
Thanks, Ferris. She's gonna thank me. So, unanimous consensus, we are not having an honest conversation on the African, on a continental level. Like I pointed out, earlier, ask yourself one question. Do you think African leaders, every time they meet for the African Union gathering, that they are being honest about the right way to run a country? Because last time I checked, we have a bunch of generals running countries. We have a bunch of people that don't remember the last time they were not the president running. So So if we are just talking about on a leadership level, we're not having an honest conversation because touchy subject.
And it's a subject basically that also feeds a discussion, obviously, about. Why we don't see the best possible example of Africa.
Nope.
Why is it taking so long for things like just connecting a road between Namibia and Angola or, basic things like that? Okay, there already is a road. Please, guys, don't misunderstand me. There's already a road running literally from Oshikango into Angola.
Yeah.
I understand that. I know it exists. I just used it as a scenario of saying, hey, listen, if tourism from Namibia needs to flow into Angola, and it shouldn't just be about Angolans as tourists flowing into Namibia. Break.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, you know, as people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back to Africa and Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. So, first of all, we're talking about diversity on the African continent, which is a good discussion to have, and how can we exploit it to our own advantage in terms of economic development.
Mm.
Again, excellent idea to have. But look, I'm not an expert at this, but one thing I know is that it's kind of difficult to exploit all this diversity, diverse resources and flora and fauna that we have on the continent, if we have guys like M23 running around.
Or it's not just M23. We have to identify the culprit behind them.
Again, we are back at solving symptoms.
Yes. Because a symptom, look, Hamid, you can literally sit with the symptom, which is M23.
Yeah.
Nah? But then, what caused the symptom? And then everybody's talking past the symptom. So, but you want me to bring some sort of a balm, a ointment, a situation, a particular remedy to deal with the symptom. But you don't want me to, diagnose the cause of the symptom.
Don't talk about that.
Now, that is one of the particular discussions on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what is one of the funniest things I've read in this week?
Mm-hmm.
But I just read like one or two sentences about it. So, Tshisekedi from DRC, and his government, they are basically in a government-to-government argument with the Belgian government. Because the Belgian governments during the colonial period of DRC, of the combined two Congos, they had literally surveyed and generated
a lot of data,
geological maps,
yeah,
about mineral deposits in the Congo Basin.
Yeah.
Now, that is knowledge that you created about someone else's knowledge that they took with them back to Belgium.
Yeah.
Tshisekedi now wants to force the Belgians to give his government those colonial maps.
Just do your own surveys.
Which,
there was my plausible next direction. Mm. Or you could just send a government official, a team of government officials, basically to go and act like DRC tourists in a Belgian museum and then write down where what deposits are, and then you go and do your own surveys.
Hang on a second. All the information can't be in the museum. They must be hiding the most important one.
No, they technically are, Hamoud. They technically are. It's one of the reasons also why there's a tech company that is causing a government-to-government dispute between Denmark and the US because of Greenland. Because Greenland also generated a lot of geological maps about Greenland. And the reason as to why the threats over Greenland happened last year and at the start of this year
mm-hmm.
was because of the rare earth minerals that are basically in the ground on Greenland.
So,
and the Greenlanders, that indigenous Inuit population there,
mm-hmm.
want nothing to do with America because they've experienced racism by American soldiers, by American bases,
yeah.
multiple bases that have been.
The 1950s.
Yeah. And they don't like the Americans. They primarily say they don't like the treatment that the Americans gave them. And they would rather stay with
Denmark.
Now, this particular conversation, which obviously shows the true face of neocolonialism, is that we literally see specifically where the private sector interests of a country tries to influence basically the foreign policy of the government of the day, which is technically has happened in history before. There's the Dutch East India Company.
Yeah.
There's the British East India Company. There was the various particular trade colonies that were firstly administered by both East India Companies. And they still are, till today, Helmut, they still are humanity's richest countries in human history. We're not talking about Mansa Musa, a monarch that was potentially the richest in human history.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about companies that were the richest companies in human history. Not even a collection. What is it? It's a collection of Google, Meta, and Apple, I think, together. Their wealth together
mm-hmm.
would basically meet up to the British East India Company's valuation. They would not even meet, they would probably meet halfway the valuation of the Dutch East India Company's value when it was at its peak, operating at its peak. So, when we sit and look at these particular discussions, in human history, colonialism was championed and was lobbied for literally by the corporations that come from Western countries. Because this has happened before. Now, like I said, Helmut, it sounds a bit weird for Tshisekedi and his government basically to try and force the Belgians to give him them information that the Congolese should basically have trained themselves in how to do geological surveys.
Yeah. You know, look, all we just have to do is, the most difficult thing. Stop stealing money. Because all these things can be outsourced.
Yes.
These are services that you know that you can outsource. Institutions that can basically gather this information. You pay them. They give you but it's all based on trust me, bro, now.
Not even trust me, bro, Hamoud. But here's the thing again. What was the famous statement that I told you about that the lady from NCRST, Anicia Peters, said 2 years back about the research and development report about Namibia? When she said in that when she highlighted in terms of when the report was launched that the biggest issue is for Africans is we send on scholarships, we send Namibians to wonderful to wonderful advanced economies there,
mm-hmm.
to get trained in wonderful programs. Then they go do research about Namibia over there for that university. But then the knowledge
that the person researched stays at that university.
Yeah.
It never sees the light of day in Namibia. They can't even reproduce the knowledge back in Namibia.
Meaning, of copyright issues.
Exactly. And because Namibia signed on to copyright protection laws, global laws, and also on patent laws, and also on, what's the other one? Well, what's the other one that goes with copyright, man?
Okay, I know copyrights and patents go along.
Yeah, but there's another one. They fall under the...
intellectual property?
Yeah. We signed the overall intellectual property conventions across the world. And guess what? Africa still has also to sign its...
Look,
So at the heart of this conversation, if we really want to deal with climate change, peace and security, there's a multitude of problems. Okay, not problems. A multitude of outstanding actions that we first have to satisfy.
I have one for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go to SADC now, shall we? This is one thing they made after, you know, this is one of the conclusions that they made after they met on the 22nd of this month.
Mm.
And one of the things that they pointed out, why I'm saying, you know, I'll just build up on the point that you just made, was on Democratic Republic of Congo. This is what they said. On the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, the summit expressed deep concern, of course it's going to be deep concern, over the resurgence of Ebola outbreak in Eastern DRC and reaffirmed, just send supplies, and they're here reaffirming, reaffirmed solidarity with the Congolese people, which is good for morale, moral support, I guess, you know, get well soon. Now, it further noted the deteriorating security situation in the region, warning that instability threatens both national peace and regional integration. You think? Now, the summit urged, my favorite part, the summit urged all parties to uphold the Doha and Washington Accords. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The instability is being caused by M23. Mm. But M23 was not at the Doha and Washington Accords signing the peace agreement.
Yeah.
Yeah, but neither DRC nor Rwanda wants to say, you know what, I'm backing these guys up. DRC are denying this, and Rwanda is doing the exact same thing. And they're both acting like one of those things practicing for Friday is not easy.
It's already Friday, Hamoud. What are you talking about? It's already Friday.
Yeah. So, particularly the ceasefire provision, and they emphasized that Africa-led peace process, complemented by international efforts, remain critical to achieving durable stability, resilience, and long-term peace. Africa's led peace process, they couldn't even get Tshisekedi and Kagame in the same room.
Remember the other thing?
It was the Qatari.
Do you know the other thing that I showed you about the military training that took place in, was it in Paris or in Switzerland? The African army units, that thing that I sent you, man. That weird report.
Oh yeah, where you said the Nigerian general asked.
And the guys training them are the American army. I'm like, what are you doing here? What are we? Oh no, it was an African military conference. Yes, about military leaderships.
So African military conference about military leadership took place outside of Africa.
In Europe. Where the Nigerian general went and said, hey, listen, we need more funding to do our job. I'm like, aren't you supposed to ask that from your government?
We need more funding to do our job. Look, that's the professional way of doing it. There's a Tura way of putting him a tiger, my bro. And when you live long enough in Tura, you understand the language, even if you don't speak African. So you know when to do business and when to run.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, it's things like that. We can be talking about why do we have a lot of foreign military installations on the continent? We want our own security. We want to run our own country. We don't want to live under our former colonial masters. But one, you keep taking their money, and a lot of your institutions, your institutions' money, is located where? in their, you know, your institution's money is located in their banks. You are running on their financial architecture.
Yeah.
The money that you are stealing is in their banks.
Yeah.
And much of the cars that you own and properties that you own is in, well, their jurisdictions. And now you see the problem.
Yep.
Now, if I'm one corrupt politician and I have stolen more money than I know what to do with, and I'm about to die anyway because I'm about to turn 120. So, look, the problem you have here is I have a lot of my country's money and my own person, let me just say my personal interest invested in a lot of this country's financial institutions.
Yeah.
The last thing I want is piss them off. And they can easily get pissed off. One thing that will end in 2021 when Nana Akufo-Addo, the former Ghanaian president, sat with Swiss government representatives and brought up the whole idea of processing
the cocoa
into chocolate or into finished product at home. Oh, they were not happy.
But here's the worst part.
That's just chocolate. That's what.
Are Ghanaians even chocolate consumers? That was the biggest part even.
Oh, there's one interesting part. And you see, there are a lot of countries. I think that was, I'm not sure if that was Cameroon. There's one country that's making headways into, into producing chocolate on the continent.
I think it's Cameroon.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. One thing that, I'm not sure if that was the Ivorians or the Ghanaians. One thing that they actually figured out after, they put in a lot of incentives to empower local, local production.
Mm.
One thing they discovered is to make chocolate, unless you are going for dark chocolate, you need a whole lot of milk.
To make milk chocolate, yeah.
Oh no, that was not the biggest problem they had to deal with.
They had to bring in cows.
We live in Africa. And chocolate needs
refrigeration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That thing is melting at 6 o'clock. Welcome to Africa. So by the time it reaches 9, your chocolate bar is baked chocolate milk.
Yeah.
So now you have to invest a lot into
refrigeration.
Which I think Namibia would do just well with the Swakop and Barbers weather.
No, we already have that, Hamon.
Mm.
I mean, this is now giving sort of like a spotlight to an ecosystem that Namibia already has to its benefit.
Yeah.
Now, I know Nigeria already has the same ecosystem. This is an ecosystem of commercial trading, meaning you've got a supplier in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for Namibian shops, this person looks like a supplier, but this person is basically just the importer of the chocolates from South Africa.
Yeah.
So this person takes the risk to buy, let's say, your Cadbury's and Beacon chocolate, the slabs, from South Africa. That truck has to bring it from there to here.
Yeah.
A truck gets here, it gets shipped in, it gets distributed to all the shops that have to stock this confectionery goods.
Yeah.
And you see, when you walk into the shops, there's air conditioning on, like, the whole day.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt that cold air?
Oh, yeah, in the shop? It is.
It's not the fridges at the back.
Mm-hmm.
It's air conditioning.
Yeah.
So the air conditioning in the shop, which is a standard for a shop to have, they must have a conducive environment for the product to be sellable to the customer. That is one of the biggest headaches. Now, go and ask yourself, Helmut. Okay, definitely you and I, we've not been to Nigeria, Canada, Nigeria, Ghana, Cameroon, or Ivory Coast. But the basic assumption, not just from the storage and manufacturing part, mm-hmm. would also be the storage, transportation, and actual on-the-shelf display part as well. So you are right.
And overall consumption.
So between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m., the chocolate goes from solid to liquid form.
Africa is brutal.
Between 6 a.m. And literally 15 minutes past, no, between 9 a.m. and literally 15 minutes past 9, the shop, the receivables department of the shop will tell the distribution company, hey, listen, this is not what we bought. This is not what we agreed upon.
Yeah.
We know the product's supposed to be in solid format.
Yeah.
Take it back. We won't pay the invoice. So you lose out on business.
Yeah.
Because you realize that you need to invest in other pieces of infrastructure that helps you
cold.
Basically to sell the product at the best level as it is supposed to be sold at.
And where does that discussion bring us to now? Because for you to produce it, you need a whole lot of energy to run that factory. Now, after producing it and transporting it, you need the physical infrastructure that will get you from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And we are back to Mbekele Thomas.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you develop or when you put money forward for development, please don't make it look so obvious as that you're just building the road for the mine.
Yeah.
Please make it look like the mine. You know, the main road has a branching out to the mine, but the road leads to the town. And it's for the townspeople to use the road and other townspeople to access this other town and vice versa.
There's one guy on social media that was showing off, his speedboat. I think he had like four engines, about 600 or 700 horsepower.
That's a lot of horses.
That's a lot of horses. So someone wrote in the comment that I can imagine how the conversation went when he bought that show, when he bought that when he bought those engines, and the sales guy was like, "Would you like a boat with those engines?" I'm like, yeah, that's a good. I mean, that's a good one because that thing, 700 horsepower. Mm. That's a lot of speed.
It's a lot of power.
Now, collabo, it's not going to be an easy one because we don't want to talk about leadership. Look, I'm not saying every country must become, every country must become. You know, must have a president and have, just one mode of leadership. If you look at the EU, for example, you have a bunch of monarchs and you have countries like France that have regular elections. They have a president. And,
Or you've got a bunch of countries that have, ceremonial heads of state.
Yeah.
But the active administrative functionary is a prime minister.
Yeah, prime ministers, yeah. So you have a combination of both. No, I mean, not even the EU, the most, if you ask me, a successful economic bloc.
Mm.
They have different types of leadership, but they know how to work together towards one thing. That's their common goal.
Mm.
Now, on the African continent, I don't believe we're having a discussion of what economic system would we like to run.
That's why I asked you the other time when we also focused on Africa.
Yeah.
Do you think there will be like a Russian roulette situation between the heads of state to decide who will chair or be president of the African Union when that economic integration takes place?
Oh, yeah, that one. I think we can do it the same way that we do with the African Union, chairs and African Union commission chairs.
Yeah, but that's the thing, Amit. When you go to the EU scenario.
Yeah.
You've got Ursula von der Leyen, who is the face of the EU.
Yeah.
So von der Leyen shows up on behalf of EU affairs at most discussions. But here in Africa, Namibia goes and does its own thing.
I think EU countries also do the same thing. I mean, we are working with both the Norwegians, the Finnish, the Germans, and then overall as an economic bloc.
Yeah, but when you go to these events here in Namibia, for example, like the Green Hydrogen events and some of the other particular economic development events, you see that it's either that individual country dealing with Namibia, so you'll have the representatives and, let's say, National Planning Commission and other stakeholders, or it'll be directly the EU and the other people from the EU, the individual missions representatives, are like just the silent representatives, just to say, yes, we're here to endorse basically the actions of our continental body, the EU, in terms of dealing with Namibia directly. Now, when we look at this discussion, do you see, because I don't see it, but I'm going to ask you now again to be a weatherman. Do you see a possibility where the AU would reach that level? Basically to speak on behalf of African countries.
On an economic level?
Basically, yes.
Oof.
It's a hard no.
Yeah, that's a hard no, because that would be like,
I also can't see the cooperation level.
You know what's the problem with that when a lot of money is involved? That would be like a bunch of cheetahs sending a hyena to go and bring them meat. It's not going to work.
Oh no, no! It's the crocodile, the lion, the leopard, the cheetah, telling the hyena, we select you to be our missionary. So go get our meat.
That's not gonna end well.
And then the hyena tells the other hyenas, "Bras, come.
You know, just listen.
Just come with. Don't ask questions.
Yeah,
you're just benefiting.
Yeah, just as long as you're benefiting, it's
just remember to wipe your mouth, please. Yeah. Please don't show any traces.
You know, one of the good thing, one of the good thing about this Africa diversity discussion is, there was a very funny case that I ran into. Was that last year?
Yeah.
Again, in my favorite country, Kenya, where a bunch of Belgian nationals were caught trying to smuggle one of the ant species.
I remember the ant species that they were trying to smuggle. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't think I was going to read something from a legitimate news source about
ant smuggling. Insect smuggling.
I've heard of human trafficking, but
no. But there's also exotic animal trafficking. Have you never heard that?
That one I've heard of.
Yeah. So the insects form part of that.
So you have the insects, like, and one of the reasons why one of the reasons pointed out by the sources was, that particular ant is highly sought after in a lot of European countries where they keep them as pets.
Yeah, go ask Florida what happened with pythons.
Florida, yes. What they do?
The python scourge that they are suffering from. The pythons are literally wiping out all small animals in Florida. Pythons are not indigenous to Florida.
Yeah.
So now the prey, basically, is moving away because there's too much of the specific predator in Florida. Why? What happened? Because of people with weird pet fetishes keeping weird pets like pythons as a pet. And then when this animal breaks out, when this reptile breaks out, this reptile literally goes and adapts to the natural environment around itself. And now it becomes a problem that is not indigenous, literally, to the area.
Didn't we learn anything from the dodo beds?
No, but those are sailors that showed up.
Sailors showed up
and decided to have a buffet of dodo meat.
Not just that. They also showed up with pigs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and much of the problem was these birds have been on this island for millennia.
Yeah.
They don't have a natural predator, so they did not evolve into defending themselves against any predator.
Yeah.
So when the predators like pigs basically showed up, they started eating a lot of things, including the young ones and eggs and everything. That's how they went extinct. So I think this is where I don't think we have learned much about introducing a new species to a new environment. It never ends well.
But that's why, like in Namibia's case, when I did that biosafety discussion, why biosafety acts from the Cartagena Protocol are becoming more and more crucial to this biodiversity discussion. Do you see, I even mentioned something, Helmut, that literally we did not even see in this document even regarding biosafety.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We didn't even see that. They were just, the whole discussion is primarily geared towards a projection of climate change, but the words they used was biodiversity, which basically speaks towards the all encompassing environment that you see.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but we quickly have to take a short break. I'm going to do a live read. This is the Velvice University NQA approval for expansion of scope. Velvice University is pleased to inform all stakeholders that the Namibia Qualifications Authority NQA Council has approved our application for expansion of scope. This approval grants accreditation for the following NQF registered qualifications offered through full-time blended learning mode at our university. These include the Bachelor of Laws Honours, the Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Social Work Honours, and the Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
Look, our plans, like my, you know, Africa's plans are very familiar to me.
Yeah.
Because they sound like my plans. Because when I was in high school, my plans, you know, according to my plans from high school, by this time, I was supposed to be driving a Lamborghini.
Oh.
But when I was making all those plans, I did not think about whose money I'm going to use to buy that Lamborghini.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, that's the thing that we see with, we see with Africa. We're making a lot of contradictory statements, and there are a lot of obvious elephants in the room in much of our discussions that we don't want to address because, well, sensitive topics. Now, have you, you know, you are the African Union, you know, now you have to talk about, term limits. That discussion.
But you've got Paul Biya there and Museveni there.
Yeah, no, they're not going to like it. Kagame is not going to like that. Museveni is not going to like that. And Paul Biya is going to hate it like, you know, like
gonna
a million
watch it on, he's going to watch it on his TV going like, haha, look at these guys. Who's term limit? I thought I was only voted in last year.
There you go. For the millionth time.
Nah, but... Nah, they won't do it. But I'll tell you now, once again, just reinforcing your answer as well. I don't think the AU will get to its promised economic integration platform. I really doubt it. Unless they pull a literal rabbit out of the hat to impress me. But I don't think they will ever achieve that level.
See, this is one of those reasons why I'm not scared of witchcraft. Because...
what?
Look, I maintain witchcraft either doesn't exist or is the most useless form of power. For one, for some reason, it only works on family members that are successful, but the broke ones, it doesn't work. So now, if that is true, then you are looking at the most useful form of power that is also hindering development. We might as well just have an anti-witchcraft commission, the same way that we have anti-corruption commission, because it's standing in between us and development. But just coming back from La La Land.
La La Land.
Yeah. Dreamland.
Yeah.
These are on a continental level. Look, the moment I saw peace agreements of the chaos being caused by M23 in DRC being signed by government officials, I threw in a towel. Look, if M23 is really just a bunch of deranged and trigger happy guys running around causing all that chaos, at least I thought they were going to be at the negotiating table, except they were not. Government officials, the guys that had spent years saying, no, we have nothing to do with those guys, are the ones all of a sudden showing up at the negotiating table. Basically negotiating the peace deal, which are now called, two of them, by the way, they started, in Doha, in Qatar, where they signed the Doha Accords. And then they was finalized in Washington, which is now called the Washington Accords. So none of these accords, did I see, not a single one of these accords did I see the M23 representatives showing up, we agree to these terms. The M23, as we know them, those guys were still in the middle of the, me and the Amazon jungle, huh?
Let's go on, Hamut, with Amazon jungle.
in the DRC jungle. So that's why I don't think I don't think I can join a terrorist group, because I can't be running around risking my legs to be blown off. And when you're sitting in an air-conditioned room, I'm not invited. Yeah. I think we got this. All we just have to do is use our Harvard, Oxford and Cambridge English, draw a blueprint, and then we go outside the continent to say, to practice Kemi Tiger Mibru. So we are basically like the formalized, high-ranking version of Tura Boys.
Yeah. Or we say You know what? We don't want a conference in Africa. Why don't you fly us to Geneva?
There's another one.
That's still the best one ever.
Yeah.
You go have an African military conference in Switzerland.
Yeah, that was in Switzerland.
Really?
I
think the Swiss just love hosting conferences on behalf of other people. You never hear it's the Swiss government inviting these people.
No. They change, just shock. And my favorite part, the one that I laughed a lot when I found out just that the U.S. Africom,
yeah,
the military collab between the U.S. and Africa, U.S. Africom headquarter is in Germany.
At that Rammstein base.
And we're talking about, continental. Now I totally understand why the silencing of the guns by 2021 fell on its face.
Because the central command, the supposed military cooperation sits in Germany.
Yeah. But don't worry, we got this.
Yeah.
We got this as a continent. My favorite part is we go and borrow money for investment. And then instead of investing that money, we steal it and then stash it in the very same banks we borrowed it from.
Yeah.
And those banks take that money and then they themselves now bring it here as foreign direct investors to invest it here.
Yeah.
And then we owe them twice.
both legally.
Yeah, both legally.
We owe them both legally. Yeah. Twice the same money.
You gotta love Africa. But, that's where we find ourselves, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as long as we just keep talking about it, I think we're going to get somewhere someday.
Hopefully.
And it's Friday, so there's something. It's time to own Anami Brewery, so you all have a good weekend.
And on that note, guys, enjoy the rest of your Friday evening programming in our company. David basically, he was here, but he's not here.
Yeah, he'll be here.
But we're going to go look for him. Don't worry.
Yeah, he'll be here in 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yeah. So on that note, see you on Sunday, not afterwards.
Oh, yeah, on Sunday.